Alrighty, and we are back to Creative Compos, where we talk with creatives about their creative process, what they do from filmmaking, photography to music, anything creative. Today's guest is Joel Arland. He's based in Suriname and he's in the filmmaking industry. What he exactly does, we'll leave up to him. We'll find out in this journey together with him. Joel, could you tell us exactly what your role is or what you actually do in the filmmaking industry?
Sure. Right now I'm studying film direction. I started last year and I'm doing that in Odisha in India. Currently back due to the COVID situation, but as far as what I physically do on a film set, I'm a bit of an all-arounder. I started out in grip and electric. So it's basically, if anything needs fastening, if it's a camera or lighting equipment, that's how we do it here. Because different industries have different job descriptions with the same title. Some have different titles. But yeah, started out in grip. Then I moved over into production. And I think for the past 2 years, at least 1.5 years, directing is what I really wanted to do.
Cool. We'll go into the more technical bits, parts in a bit. I guess my next question would be, how long have you been active in the industry and how did you get into it? Was it from growing up or how did that happen?
I've been active since around the end of August of 2016 up until now. And it's a really weird and funny story about how I got into film. Because before I was into film, I was into events. And I was predominantly as a production assistant and assistant stage manager and then stage manager. And that started out in 2013 with the ominous, infamous Cali Festa. So I met somebody there who thought I was doing a good job. That person took my number. That person was, by the way, Marisa Piplombosch from the Nationale Falls Music Hall. She's the acting director. And we wrapped that up. And a few months after that, I think it was 2 or 3 months in October, I get a call. Hey, it's Marisa from so-and-so-and-so. Are you interested in working? And that's how I started. And then I met Chantal Reka, Dino Capo, Janine Haynes. And that went all the way up to 2016. And then they had the Oda to the Lute Adel. And that's where I met Kenzo Sumodihajo. And what happened is what I do with all my clients after a stage management or a production gig, I go for an evaluation. So I can know where I stand, know where I need to get better, know where I did okay. And I told him if he has any more of these events, he can just hit me up. And he asked me yo, what do you think about film? Have you ever been interested? I was like, yeah, sure. I'm down for that. And then I did my first commercial with them. No, it was first a practice movie, a short movie that will probably never see the light of day. But yes, it goes like that sometimes, man.
Cool.
So
all right.
But where was I? Oh yeah. Short movie that never saw the light of day. Then I did a Kirkulani commercial with them. And that's where I met one of the guys, Kevin Hovdar, who I knew from PlayStation because we were playing Destiny together. So that's where I got interested in film and seeing how things go down on the film set, because I was pretty ignorant about it because I didn't know anything. I just know people make movies, there's lots of cameras, but I didn't know it was that much effort. So for about a month and a half, every time that he came online to play Destiny, every other day I was like, hey, do you need people? And at some point I got through to him, I guess, because I got a phone call from the owner of Gripbusters at Fawaka Creations, Dave Edhart, and I've basically been there since 2016.
So basically you got dragged into the industry by people, I guess, from your events, people who knew you, and just from one job to another. And that's how you ended up in that, where you are now, I guess.
So, yeah. That's a pretty good way of describing it.
Tell us a bit about that practice movie that never made the light of day. Why didn't it make the light of day?
Full disclosure, I still don't know why some of the projects don't see the light of day. Sometimes, okay, a lot of with these, I don't know if I should call them passion projects. I think the expectations might be higher than the actual product turns out to be, and then people are just disappointed and are like, you know what? Nah, never mind. I'm not gonna put this out there.
Okay. But what was your general, I guess, experience, first impression on that job? What was your role?
I was a production assistant, so I had to, you know, get the props, go and get the food, make sure there's enough food and drinks. Because one thing that's really important on a film set is the catering. That's
really?
Don't let anybody tell you anything else. The catering is one of the most important things. Catering and coffee. Those are catering, coffee, water. Yeah, those are the three most important things on the set, or the most underrated things on the set. Let's just say that.
Yeah, you say underrated. So I guess generally for a production, how long are you on a set, like consecutively? Like how many hours? Let's say for this session, the practice shoot. How long were you guys busy?
I think it was about a good 8 to 10 hours, not counting setup time.
So that's like the whole day, the shooting process.
Yeah. We usually keep in mind it's gonna be at least 12 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's usually at least 12 hours because when we did Weed In, we made some, I think, 16 to 18 hour days. It was wake up, go get the equipment, drive to the location, set up, and then it's, if we're on one location, it's well, easier, I guess, because you don't have to load in, load out. I think the longest we've gone was 18 hours. Nonstop.
Okay. So let's walk through, I guess, the different roles on a set. You say you're more of an all-rounder. What was your production assistant at first, and how did you transition to, I guess, the different roles like gripping, lighting, and we'd like to know your experience with them as well. Do you have a preference to one over the other?
Yeah, there's definitely a preference. But I started out as a production assistant. And then for the lack of people, because I wanted to produce when I got into filmmaking. I thought that was cool. But yeah, it's not. It's just a headache.
What is the job of a producer?
It's basically usually the financial and the managerial side of the planning, making sure you find your talent, all those things, finances. That's a short, or those are a few roles, because you have different types of producers. You have executive producers, you have line producers, you know, and you have location producers who do, they're basically production, but they, you call them location managers, and they do strictly locations. And then you have, per location, you might have one location manager, and they handle like the production side of that location.
Okay, so it's more like
it's a pretty broad umbrella term for a bunch of jobs. But what I did as a producer here was I was put in charge of helping to find actors, props, making sure everybody's on set. So it's here because of it's a small country. You know, 600,000 people, even smaller industry. So what we tend to do is have one person wear multiple hats. So we, by default, you're starting as an all-arounder, or you'll go through some of the roles that you wouldn't necessarily do in a country, say like America, where they have a much bigger industry, or India, where they have a much bigger industry. People just tend to specialize in one thing, and that's it.
And I guess in a sense, your producing is like the more logistical side, and I guess your event planning experience kind of transitioned well in that, or naturally in that role, in a way, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. If I did not have that event and stage management experience, I would have definitely had a pretty rough time, because it's all about, and filmmaking is all about problem solving. It doesn't matter in what function you are. There's one thing is certain, that at a certain point there's going to be a problem and it's going to need solving. So getting a good 4 years in problem solving was pretty solid for me. It really helped.
Okay, awesome. And I guess from my understanding, the director role is more the creative side, right? Of the onset?
Yeah, it's one of the creative sides, yeah.
Because generally you have producers and directors. I always confuse them in the beginning. For what their specific roles are.
Oh, the producer cares about the money. The director, not so much.
Okay, that's a nice way of putting it.
Okay, yeah, the director is really more concerned about, you know, making sure it looks good, and the producer is making, he's more worried about making it look good on the smallest budget.
I see. Okay, so from assistant producer, you got into grip and lighting. How did that transition happen? And I guess what's your, what do you like and what don't you like about those different types of roles?
With production, it gets a lot. It's easy to get overwhelmed when it's like almost a domino effect. When one thing goes wrong, it's easy to for a lot of other things to go wrong as well. It's like a snowball down a hill, and if you don't nip it in the bud as effective and as fast as possible, it might be a snowball into a big problem. While with lighting, the snowball effect isn't really that apparent there, or it's not really as much existent as it is in production. And I definitely liked lighting more at the tail end of, you know, that, because in the beginning I wanted nothing more than to produce. But once I got a bit of the hang of, you know, how light works, what you can do with it, I was pretty interested, pretty fascinated by it, and tended to go more towards the creative side and leave the production side.
Yeah. Okay. So especially for the visual, I guess, photography, lighting is one of the most important aspects. It can either make or break a mood depending on the type of light you have and just how well the scene is lit, it can change everything drastically. So what, I guess, for you, getting into lighting, were the biggest challenges of like understanding how that worked for you, and how did you actually process that for yourself to get more, I guess, efficient or more practical at it?
The hardest part was, I guess, the technicality of it all. I'm not a too technical person. So I kind of did struggle with that. But once I got it explained to me, and once I started understanding it, it became a lot easier. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a lot of factors. There's a lot more numbers involved than a lot of people would think.
Care to explain that a bit?
I mean, the basic unit of light, I guess, we use are stops. And there's a, for example, shooting outdoor. We went by chance, went for a shooting outside today. And knowing when to use a filter, because it's way too bright outside. And if you close your aperture, you lose your depth of field. So everything becomes sharp, but you don't want that. You still want to distinguish between, you know, I want to highlight this by making it in focus or keeping it in focus. And I want to keep everything either in front of it or in the background of it out of focus. So then you use an ND, and then just before I couldn't make that a tiny mat issue in my head about, okay, we need to be at aperture 2.8, and then, okay, then how many stops do I need to remove from my from hitting my sensor to get that? Just like that. Same with lighting, knowing how much lighting you would need, like just based on the guess. Because I've seen interviews with with DOPs from Hollywood, and you know, those guys, the experience is definitely something that helped me. In the beginning, it was a bit of a struggle. Like I said, I'm not a too technical person, but I kept hammering away at it, and the experience definitely helped. Also, people that pushed you, Kevin, Dave, and there's like a lot of other people that pushed you. Pushed me to just be a better creative person. I would say it's the experience and being with people that have a like-minded mindset. Yeah.
So I guess when it comes to lighting, what would be your, I guess, recommendation? Say we're in a room, your bedroom, a simple light setup where you don't have to pay more than, let's say, $50 or whatever you have in the house. How would you recommend a setup just for this video call, for example, to get nice lighting? Where do you position the subject?
That all depends. One of the first things I was told is you light for mood, not for exposure. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, what kind of mood do you want? Do you want, you know, like a high key office commercial type of thing? Do you want a homey feel? Then you make it a bit warmer.
Okay, let's go for the homey feel.
Practicals, lots and lots of practicals. Just tungsten bulbs, man. Just regular bulbs, 40, 60, 75 watts. They do wonders when more than one is on.
Right. And I basically have one right here in the back of my laptop. If I turn it off, you'll see.
Yeah. on the right side of your face. Yeah.
So I'm bouncing it off the wall.
The walls. White wall, Oh man, white houses are, well, for the lack of a better word, a bitch to light. Well, to keep light away from everything, because you have to flag and. Yeah, it can get pretty detailed. I remember this job where we were keeping just like a finger of light off a tomato. And there were like stands everywhere just to keep this amount of light off a tomato, off the side of the tomato.
Cool. I guess we'll segue to the next part. You mentioned you've been to India, and you're currently still doing that, I guess, course, degree in filmmaking. What is it exactly? And
yeah,
how did you get into
bachelor.
India?
It's a bachelor degree, so 3 years. And India was always an option when I started looking into schools to apply. Biggest film industry in the world. People still think Hollywood is the biggest film industry, but by sheer volume, India consumes. They make, they produce, and they consume more film than Hollywood. By sheer volume. I mean, it's 1.3 billion people. So
yeah,
it's almost four times the population of the US.
Wow. So I guess you're in the, which part? Delhi?
Delhi is the capital, but I'm way on the East Coast.
East Coast.
I'm on the East Coast in a city called Bhubaneswar, and that is in the state Odisha. It's a coastal state, you know, not too different from the climate back home, so that was nice. And it's been a really, really, really interesting experience.
Would you say that what would be the Hollywood equivalent in India, or
it's hard to say because
is it like really spread out?
It's pretty spread out. You have like six or seven different film industries. Like every state might have, like, for sure, the north, the east, the south, and the west all have their own film industries, because you have the Tamil industry, the South Indians, the Telugu films, the Bangla, the West Bengal films. Then you have Mumbai, which is Bollywood, and even in the state I'm in, you have Hollywood for Orissa, but they're all pretty different. While still being kind of the same, there's still a lot of song, a lot of drama. Definitely a lot of drama. They like their dramas.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like their dramas. There's a lot of drama. But
okay.
Yeah.
So I guess got to India. You just apply. Well, what is that process? How did you choose, like, vet for which university or college to go to, I guess, do the course you're doing now?
Yeah. So, like I said, India was always an option when I started looking into these things. There were two other countries, three actually, the United States, Belgium, and the Netherlands, but the United States.
I'm asking because there's a lot of I guess creatives as well who don't know about the opportunities. So maybe this could shed some light to that process.
Yeah, and I'm more than willing to explain how I did it. It wasn't really that hard. So I looked into boss. I also looked into China. There's one guy from Suriname in China at the BFA, Beijing Film Academy, studying photography. So it's definitely possible. But what I did is I tried it via BOSS, Bureau Underways Estudio Help Suriname, or something like that. And then I tried via embassies. So I called the Indian embassy. And I asked them where I could apply, or if they know of or have scholarship schemes. So I got a site. It's studyinindia.gov.in. And you need to make up a profile. You sign up and you upload your degrees. I did my high school degree. And then you can choose like what field you want to study, and then it'll give you a list of what level, if it's bachelor, postgraduate, PhD, or short courses, and then they'll give you schools that provide what you filled in. And this was one of the few film schools that gave the scholarships for a bachelor.
Okay.
For a bachelor degree. So I applied, and I got an email after, I think, 3 months. I applied in March, and I got an email the 5th of July.
Yeah, it usually takes a while, so
yeah,
you shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, it was a really weird process waiting for that thing, because I didn't know it was going to happen. In the meantime, I had already booked a ticket to go and, you know, for a vacation to Holland. I was going to go to a festival and, you know, network there. And the last day that they gave themselves to notify the participants, I got an email, and I was sitting with all my friends. We just came back from a job a few days ago in the interior. And I get an email. I was like, oh, this is weird. And I see it's an acceptation letter. Like, hey, you've been accepted for a partial scholarship. You need to be here in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Like, oh, okay. So I forwarded to my mom, and, you know, I go home. Everybody's asleep already. And that was a Friday. And the next Saturday, we just immediately started brainstorming, okay, how are we going to do this? And that's how I left everything here in 2 weeks. And yeah, moved to India, man.
And that was pre-COVID, right?
That was last year.
So you've been in India until, well, when did you get back?
The 21st of July. I left last year the 21st of July, and I came back this year the 21st of July. So it was exactly one year.
Okay, so, but you still got 2 years to go, right? So,
one something. Because the way they've structured the thing, you start with 6 courses in your first year per semester. So it's 6 courses in your first semester, 6 courses in your second semester, and in your second year, you choose a specialization. My school has 3 of those. You have editing, you have cinematography, and you have directing. I went for directing, and I have 3. Well, actually 2, and one of them is a course for everybody, which is the history of television. And then they fuse it together, the history of world television and the history of Indian television. And then it's per semester, you then have 2 specialization specific courses. For directing, it's film theory and screenwriting this semester. And next year, I think you have 1 exam in September and November for 1 subject. Then you have to do a documentary in December. And then, well, start it when the school starts again in January, you can start with your graduation film.
See. So when are you supposed to get back, and is travel possible at all now to get back?
it's a
tricky situation everywhere.
Yeah, it's hard to say. They said before I left, school is going to open at earliest in January. And if I have to look at how it's going now, they're not looking that hot. Till last week, I saw they were hitting record numbers of infections per day.
Yeah.
But the good thing is they've moved everything online.
Okay, so you can still progress.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hustle, because it's an 8.5-hour time difference with Suriname. So I have to wake up at 1:30 in the morning just to, you know, be in the lecture. But, you know, we made a commitment. We're going to keep pushing. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I guess that's pretty much how everything is now. And then on the other hand, you think, with the fees and everything, is it worth it to travel all the way across the world to to another country. I guess, what was your first impression when arriving in India and then at the school? Was it as you expected? What surprised you, I guess?
I really didn't have an impression. I deliberately went into India or to India without any expectations, just because I wanted to experience it for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I think that's important into giving a especially a new place where you're gonna be there for 3 years, a chance. It's I think it's important not to go with any preconceived notions. And I mean, if it wasn't for COVID, I'd probably still be there because I enjoyed it. What India gave me was an opportunity to, excuse my French, but it was get my shit together. And I used that opportunity pretty well. I got back in shape, started reading a lot more, started writing because I knew I was going to opt for direction, come hell or high water. So I started writing even before it was mandatory. I just started writing. And I discovered, I made the right choice by coming here on not only a creative level, but definitely a personal and a mental level. And as far for the school, I thought there was going to be more equipment and stuff like that. But it's a big school. They have like 23 campuses over.
Wow.
A lot of ground. and the campus is integrated into the town or into the city. But the teachers there, man, they do put in a lot of hard work for the students, even to the point that I think some of the students are taking way, maybe a too lenient approach to it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm glad I did it. I don't have any regrets whatsoever, you know, but yeah, the equipment is not even that much of an issue because you don't need great equipment because I've seen people do really shitty things with the best cameras. Yeah. It's just about being creative with what you have because you can do a lot with a little.
Say doing a lot with a little. You've been there in your first year that you've been there. Have you done any, I guess, productions like worked with, I guess, the locals? Did you have to do any, production for a project or anything?
No, from the school side, it was pretty much theory.
It was a lot of theory.
Yeah, because what I noticed is like two guys had experience. That was it. Me being quite a bit older than most of my batch mates, everybody's fresh out of high school, which is, I think, a weird thing for film school. Yeah.
Why is that? Or why do you think it's weird?
Well, it's weird because I took a major detour to get to film school. I studied law, didn't finish it, then went to work. And, you know, in between the law and dropping out and finding work, that's where I found film. To me, it's kind of weird because I don't know if I had that age, if I would have gone for film or even take it seriously. That's just, you know, growing up here, you know, everything, Nuspan, all that. So to me, it's weird. I mean, kudos to them, man. You're earlier. You have a light. Yeah, you have 8 years on me. Good for you.
Well, but, I wouldn't really be so concerned about the age thing, but I think your experiences and your previous, I guess, law and everything else would help give you some more perspectives that the others don't have.
Yeah, and also, you know, coming from a foreign country, having lived abroad even before moving to India already, it really shapes a person. I think it's important to see the world, at least, you know, if it's one other country outside of your own. Just for, you know, a bit of a perspective. But it helped me to take a really good look at how India is. Yeah, and take the best parts of India for me and use that.
What would be one or two things that you're taking with you that you've seen? But this could be one of the greatest things I'm taking back home with me or in life in general for India.
Not complaining, man. Not complaining, because right outside the school, there's like people living, like four families living in one house. And it's like I said, it gives perspective. When you see people in a totally different situation, be it worse than you have it or be it better than you have it, it gives perspective nonetheless. And it also gave me a work ethic, because I believe that people who come from a place and go to a new place have two things. They can either slack off or work hard. I mean, I guess it's kind of an immigrant mentality. Not that I'm an immigrant, but I don't want to leave my country and go there and slack off. And so what I did is I worked pretty hard. I think I had a 9-point-something GPA out of 10 of all my subjects the first semester. And I came back home with that same mentality. So those are definitely two things. Yeah, a way better work ethic I took over from there, because everybody there, like everybody works pretty hard, especially in construction. It doesn't matter, men, women, young, old, everybody works. Everybody does some.
Okay, awesome. Devin, feel free to interject if you got anything, man. You've been listening intently. I see you there. I see you. And of course, Joel, if you got any thoughts as well, just feel free. We're just having some casual talks here.
What do you guys think about the progress in, Surinamese media? As in, a lot of people have been getting into videography, you know, the quality of music clips has probably been getting better. What do you guys think about that?
No, I have definitely seen a tremendous improvement, I guess, in the past 3-4 years in the production quality, in general, overall. And I think it has to do with just some people started, but getting that exposure out there, and social media helps a bit compared to the traditional television, because sometimes you compare what these creators are making on YouTube, posting on Facebook, and the quality difference is way up there compared to people production for 6-7 years ago. And yeah, I think it's going generally in the right direction, and there's a lot of potential. The only, I guess, thing that's a bit lacking is Nathan has the audiovisual department now, but yeah, you still need that from both ways. Okay, you have the facilities, but you need some more people, and I think that's where you could come in as well. Once you finish your degree there, you got the experience. It's about sharing that.
I'm definitely gonna have to agree with you there, Diego, about the quality, the production quality. Definitely improving in the last 5 to 6 years. And with Anatin, I've actually met some of those guys. I think a lot of these kids could do good things. I mean, it's all up to them, man. What if they want to do it? Because what I've noticed, and this is across the board with everything, people kind of, well, it looks like people kind of say they want to do something good, but don't necessarily want to put in the good work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's just how I perceive it. I'm not saying that's the case, because when, and this, and that's actually because I think I used to be that way. And like I said, having certain people around me really knocked some sense into me that if you say you want something, or saying you want something is easy, proving it is a lot harder. And
I think, as you said, having the right people, I think being able to see more people that actually, as you said, you've been there, but made that transition, kind of gives them some perspective as well for, this person can do it, so I should be able to do it. But like 10 years ago, you didn't really have these individuals as prevalent, kind of known.
Yeah, definitely. I think even I was into like a position of, I wouldn't say luck, but privilege, for lack of a better word, because some of the people I worked with, they started out, they had a lot rougher start than I did. Mm-hmm. They had to look people up. In life, it's, and in anything you want to be good at, you need to find someone to mentor you who has already done what you want or is already there where you want to be. And again, with the ease of technology, with people being able to do more with, I guess, less, because that's also one of the things why people, cameras used to be crazy expensive, and they're getting the prosumer line keeps getting cheaper, I guess, for more options. Just use it, man. Use it. The technology is going so fast. Just if you see somebody who you'd like to work with, this is what I do. If I worked with somebody, and I've worked with a few people that are doing pretty awesome things, in the UK now, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, just keep the contact. Just, it might seem weird, just send them a DM. They don't have to respond. Just send a DM. Just send it. They know in the back of their head, hey, this kid always, you know, sent me something. And I think one thing we need to do better here, again, across the board, is networking. Because mm-hmm. in Suriname, yes. networking is a weird, weird thing. I mean, don't be afraid to weasel yourself into a place. I did it, and it's worked out pretty great for me.
I agree with him about the networking. Because sometimes we like to be a critic of, okay, let me start over. So what I wanted to say about the film industry in Suriname is that it started to grow, because I wanted to ask that question already, but we're already strolling down that lane. So is this a problem of user and platform? Like, what I'm trying to say is, now we're getting a lot of guys making productions, and the platform for that is getting built up. Like, for instance, we have now a lot of person putting their production on YouTube, and they have now the ability to gain traction by getting paid by it. Because I know some parents be thinking, oh, you're gonna do film, it's okay, what can you make a living out of it, and all those kind of stuff. So, but now you're getting, people are getting more pushed to do you have designers, you have photographers, filmmakers. So like, if more people go that stream, the platform will be building itself out, because we're trying to make it better and better. I mean the industry. Is that also one of the problems we're having, that we're not, the growth is getting there?
Yeah, I think what you're referring to as well is the lack of own content, right? If people keep producing more, definitely. Because you just need to look at what we show on TV here. it's like what per TV station, it's less than 10 Surinamese programming items. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and most of them are news, and there's no movies, there's no series, there's no documentaries. All of those are imported. So I think it's because Suriname has a lot of stories to tell, man. And I think those stories need to be told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess putting it simply to follow up on what Devin's saying, can you make a living out of filmmaking currently now? Oof. Well, you're kind of doing it, but just be straight with it. What would need to happen to get to that point, I guess?
Well, the way I see it, I haven't made a living solely off filmmaking. Mm-hmm. There's a few people that do, but I haven't been able to do it yet. But that's also because here it's more commercials than anything else. I do a lot of those because those pay the bills. And a lot of people that want to transition from, the commercials to cinema keep doing commercials because commercials pay the bills. But I think I'm still in a position of being relatively young. I can stall this out as long as possible just to focus on right now becoming a better writer and a director, I guess. So it's possible, but I wouldn't be able to tell you how to do it because I'm not doing it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Dev.
Okay. You pointed one thing out, and that was networking. I think we have a lot of people who are making their productions. Like there are small groups out there on social media, mostly on Facebook, and some independent filmmakers. And I see they're putting their content out of there, like on Facebook or Instagram. But maybe I think they should try also other platforms as Vimeo or YouTube. But YouTube is like mainstream. But I think what I'm trying to say here, should they put it more out to those platforms than only the ones we know, just to get more to networking?
Again, I think in film, it's important to know. This is one of the first things they taught us in production class. Know your audience. Who do you want to reach with these things? And based on that, that's how you structure everything around it. You know, okay, I have this story and I want to reach teens or kids from 15 to 25. And then you go look at the numbers. What platforms do they use the most? Because you mentioned Vimeo, but Vimeo is a pretty, I guess, artistic platform compared to YouTube. YouTube has artistic videos, but Vimeo is more cinematic focused. Mm-hmm. See, it's a different crowd on Vimeo than there is on YouTube. YouTube does a lot of good, but Vimeo does a lot of good as well, but just in a different way.
Yeah, because why I was asking that, because I have been seeing a lot of good productions, like really good productions, and they're putting it on Facebook and YouTube. But I myself, I'm scared to give them the tip, but hey, you should try this on Vimeo, but I don't know how they would handle it. Like everybody handles different, not critic, but tips and that sort on and so on. They might be scared and also, but yeah, I would really definitely ask them to try that.
Yeah, I think you should just do it. I think you should just do it. And this is to everybody, I think, that when you think you're pretty convinced of something you want to do, I would say don't think too long, because if you start thinking too long, you start to overthink, and then you'll find the way the human brain is set up is it's a problem solving thing. It solves problems. That's it. That's the way we're set up.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking about something, you're going to eventually find a problem to solve. and that problem might be self-imposed and non-existing in reality. So just don't think too long. Just know, okay, I want to do this. How do I do this? And that's it. Just go for it.
Dropping some life quotes there.
Yeah.
No, but coming back to the platform, I think some creators locally, for example, Shalyn Arga, she was a previous guest a few episodes ago. She actually has, I saw she published today or yesterday, a video, and she's making content on Wakapasi, the area near Waterkan,
yes.
With where the little shops are. And I think she partnered with Telesur and ATV to do some content creation there. And that's a way to expand your network as well. So if you have content, try to match it with, I guess, some of the local networks. And that could be an entry point to get funded as well for your productions.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. For sure. That's definitely... the only thing is, you know, when you're working with networks and stuff like that, this is across the globe. You just need to pay attention that you don't lose what you want to tell, because it's easy, because they're like, yeah, I'm giving you the money, but you need to hold fast to what you want to tell. That's what I try to do now. And when I approach somebody or ask for feedback, I also try to, I listen to the feedback and I use it where necessary, because criticism is, it's a great thing when you know how to take it.
Yeah.
Do you have any, I guess, a framework or on how you handle or take in feedback and criticism to help you process it?
Well, this, and like one thing about, I used to be pretty aggressive, you know, I listened to reply and stuff like that. Whatever, when I started to get into filmmaking, again, those like-minded people, they once told me like, yo, maybe you should actually try to listen what people are saying instead of just listening to reply. And I was like, huh, okay, let me give this a go. And, I started doing that and just listening to what people, and when you just listen, when you already don't get defensive by nature, you can truly listen and take in what they're trying to say. Because communication, we often make it seem like it's an easy thing, but communicating is pretty difficult. Because there's so much that can go wrong. You have a sender, you have a receiver, and then you have the ether.
Noise.
And there's 3 points where it can go horribly wrong, you know? So once I started listening, I was like, I think you're right. And after that, at the same time, it's self-reflection, because if you can't self-reflect, you will never be able to take criticism, you know, well. Because you immediately again get defensive and you're like, no, I wasn't wrong. I was, you know, it's his fault or something like that. So it's definitely a lot of self-reflection and being able to listen.
Okay, cool. What I want to move on next, I got some of your profiles open here, and I see, I guess you called your brand, or so to say, Yggdrasil Productions.
Correct.
What I know, like Yggdrasil is like from the Nordic mythology, like the tree of life or something like that. What's the world inspiration? Tree. Yeah, what's the inspiration behind that? And
well, for me, it's the world. Like I said, it's the world tree, and it connects the nine realms in Norse mythology. And that's kind of what I want to do with Yggdrasil Productions. I want to connect the clients to the professionals and the product to the people. That's basically the gist behind Yggdrasil as a brand.
Nice. That's a very thought out. And I guess, how did you get into that? What spoke to you into the Nordic mythology? And is there any history behind that kind of shaped your...
I just like history. I like I'm when it comes to my interests, I'm a pretty weird person, even if I say so myself. I like a lot of things. I like psychology, philosophy, sociology, and then we have, of course, art, music, paintings, cinematography. But then again, science, astrophysics. Even if I don't completely get it, yeah. I just know like a tiny bit. I find those things fascinating. Quantum physics. I have a pretty broad range of interests.
And I guess having a broad range of interests is all well and good. So what's your stance and going on specializing and being a generalist? What's your stance on that? Opinion?
I think both are important, but at some point, my personal take on this is I don't like being in a room and not being able to partake in conversation, especially when it's a really interesting conversation. So I try to be a generalist as much as possible. And then I have a few things I'm passionate about, and that's where I try to be a specialist. Like when it comes to directing, like I like a lot of aspects of film. I like the lighting part of it. I find scoring films incredibly, incredibly interesting. But
what is scoring films?
Making the music score.
The music, yeah.
Yeah, based on that's also very important. Knowing what to, because a movie with bad shots and good sound and music, you can get away with, but vice versa, it does not work. So I think it's incredibly, incredibly fascinating to me. So, and that's why I tried to, you know, because I picked up music again, just for personal development and being a better filmmaker, better creative. So I think both are important. You need to be a generalist, but you also need a specialist. You need to be a specialist with especially the things you're passionate about. You know, you can be like, and that's the thing with a doctor, because every doctor starts as like a house doctor, just a regular doctor.
Yeah.
And then they find this thing that they want to specialize in. I think that's the best example I can give.
No, that's nice. I pretty much stand in the same realm. I'm not a firm believer of going like straight deep into specialization, because in a sense specialization was born from the Industrial Revolution, where they tried to optimize the processes and the workers to, okay, you're supposed to do this one thing and this one thing only, and you're part of the whole machine. And yeah, for some, I guess, fields, it's necessary. But I think especially in the creative industry, there is a lot of value by having a broad range of interest, because that is kind of what sparks creativity in the first place, trying to mix and match all those different pieces like a puzzle and create something from that. So yeah, I really think people should explore more in that sense.
Yeah, it also makes you a lot less obsolete, or you know, it makes you obsolete in far less of a degree, because if you're a specialist, there's always somebody better than you. I think that's something we don't really realize a lot here in Suriname. There's always somebody better than you, so you got to keep working. And if you're a specialist, you have, like I said, somebody better than you, somebody that can learn so much quicker than you. But if you're like this specialized generalist, you're a lot more valuable And a friend of mine had this because, again, like I told you, a lot of the generalization of knowledge that we know here stems from a necessity, not a lack of people, lack of bodies. And he went abroad and he was the only person on that set that know how to use, that operate one of the gimbals. Because everybody else is specialized and there was no guy with that particular specialization over there. So I think that's a very good example of why it's important to be both a generalist and a specialist at the same time.
It's funny that you phrased it specifically like that, a specialized generalist. I actually have a sticky note right here with that.
great minds, man.
So quite interesting.
Send a photo.
Sorry? What was that, Deb?
Send a photo of the sticky note.
Sure. I guess then, well, when it comes to next, you have a broad range of interests. You like reading. Are there any, I guess, books that come to mind that you've read, like that kind of left an impression on you that you'd recommend somebody try?
Yeah, 12 Rules for Life, Jordan B. Peterson.
12 books for life. Rules.
12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. That's what's one of the first books I'll recommend. I thought Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari was also pretty awesome.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, The Social Leap by William von Hippel, also awesome. And then, you know, classics like, which I'm still reading, 1984 by George Orwell.
That's an interesting view on society.
Animal Farm. I also looked into Fahrenheit 451, which is also on my list to read. It's usually a lot of scientific books, I guess. And then I recently got into novels. I started reading My Name is Red by Orhan Pamuk, I guess his name is. He was a Nobel Prize winner in literature. I did not like the book, you know, to each their own, I guess. But I think it's important, man. Reading helped me to you know, be a lot more creative as well.
Yeah. And I guess you're doing a lot of writing now as well. And having read a lot, and how is your writing process, I guess? Were you always like a natural writer, or was that something you had to develop over time?
I actually had an interest in writing when I started in film, which was in the end of 2016. I started with a concept for a script, which is I still have lying around somewhere here, and that's where I started. And then I stopped till, I guess, 2 years ago, and then I started writing a documentary, which I'm researching now. And when I went to India last year, that's where I really started writing. I guess it was kind of brought up.
I guess, are there any tips or like hacks you use when, let's say, for script writing specifically?
I usually just write down my idea first, because I can pretty fast or pretty quickly form the story in my head. But everything works in your head, so I write it down and then I break the story down, like, okay, and then I write the story out till I'm satisfied with it. And I also write in that breakdown what I want to do with the story. This is what I want to tell. This is how I want to tell it. And then I start by one-lining every scene, like every scene in one or two lines. This is what's happening. This is what happens. These characters are involved. And I do that for basically every scene. And then I make those scenarios, I blow those up to what I visually want to see and what's going on. And that becomes then the broader story. And then I go on to write in dialogues in that. And then make the shots and then put it all together. And then you have a screenplay.
Yeah, it's always like fascinated because it's a lot of steps that you need to go through to actually develop that idea that you have in your head into something physical, tangible, because people underestimate like the amount of thought that goes through it. Generally, they only see the end product. So it's always quite interesting to see how that process is.
Yeah, and what I noticed is, like I said, everything works in my head. And then I write it down. I was like, oh, wait, no, this will not work. This won't work. And I, you know, scrap it. And then, oh, no, this might work. And then link it. And what I did was, anybody that wants to write film, this is what I did. I found a few directors who I absolutely adore, which are Quentin Tarantino, Alfred Hitchcock, Alejandro González Iñárritu, that's the guy from Birdman, The Revenant, and see how they make their films and how they write. I read a few scripts as well. I need to get back into script reading. And then what I do, I read the script, and then I read the script again, but then with the movie next to it. And then you can clearly see what they did. Okay, this is where something went. And what you notice, and this is what I noticed with The Predator from 1981. Yeah. Not everything that's in the script is in the film, or some things that are in the film are not in the script. So everything is subject to change till it's being recorded. Even when it's being recorded, it's still subject to change. Mm. And like I said, find the directors you enjoy, whose work you enjoy, and then see what they say about writing. Because two guys that have really, really gotten me to think about how I write are Matt Stone and Trey Parker from South Park. And they have this simple rule about causality, and they have they say, if you have two events, and you can say from I woke up and then I went outside, mm-hmm. that's where you're screwed. But if you said I woke up, had something to do, therefore I went outside, there needs to be cause. It's cause and effect always. It's not just a random string of events. It's cause and effect, or at least that's how I interpreted it. And that's when I started paying attention to that, and that made me write a lot more fluid.
That's actually quite interesting. I'm noting that one down.
And, I did it also.
Yeah.
Akira
Kurosawa, by the way, he's also a great director, was a great director, Akira Kurosawa. Some of his films are on YouTube, by the way. Dersu Urzala is a film about I don't know if it was Japanese or Chinese. I think he was Japanese, but it was a Japanese guy living in the Russian wilderness. It's a pretty good film. It's a great film, actually. But he said, just write every day. Just take a piece of paper and a pen and write. That was his advice. Just write. And you'll suck at the beginning, but everybody that's starting out, you know, unless you're talented, but...
Yeah, even then.
let's assume. And that's a thing. And that's also what I've been doing a lot lately, is looking how other people look at life. And there's this guy from Impact Theory. I think his name is Tom Bilyeu.
Tom Bilyeu, yeah.
Yeah. And he says, we're the only species that can this effectively, I guess, learn new things that fast. And the human condition just to learn things, just go for it. He also said, I can't do what I want to do yet. And I think that's pretty cool. The fact that we can say, hey, I want to go do that, even if we know nothing about it, we can just learn it. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. It's basically a general outlook on life. And you mentioned it in filmmaking, it's problem solving, but that is life in general. It's how do you deal with the current situation? It's you have control on how you react, and you can either do nothing, learn from it, learn how to overcome it. And yeah, that's how you gotta go about.
Perspective, perception is everything, man. How you perceive the world will shape you, or will shape your world.
Awesome. Devin, do you have any final questions, remarks for Joel?
So far, no. I'm really amazed, like what writer can do and what film, like if you want to excel in film and directing and cinematography, what kind of skills do you need? What kind of skills do you need to learn? Like, for instance, he was saying about write every day. And that's a quote from a writer. So, yeah, right now I'm just like not per se speechless, but I have heard all those quotes. But like literally hearing this in this podcast, it's, yeah, I need to check a lot of things again about writing. So, yeah, but thank you for all those quotes and life hacks.
My pleasure.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's been a breath of fresh air, especially seeing it from a different perspective, because there's creators in the whole ranges, and filmmaking, you can even break down in so many subcategories, going into directing, going into cinema, or just doing sketches on YouTube. There's so many directions you can go, but what really left an impression is just your general outlook on life and how you approach things, and also that transition you've made going from your events to filmmaking, getting dragged into it and really enjoying it and exploring it, to going to India. So thank you for sharing all that. Are there any, I guess, last thoughts that you'd like to share, or questions, anything goes?
Nah, man, I just appreciate you guys for having me. It was super fun. And I guess, I thoroughly enjoyed this. It's good to talk about these things. I mean, I think in the way, especially with everything that's going on now, everybody's a bit, a positive distraction is always helpful.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I guess with that being said, we'll leave it at this. Of course, where can people link up with you? Where can they find you online? If they, you know, if there's anything, if at all, or are you private? That's okay too.
Oh. No, I mean, I'm on social media. It's Joel Adland on Facebook. It's Joel Adland 290 on my Instagram. And the link to Igres Hill Productions is also in there. And it's Joey Minati on Twitter.
Cool. We'll drop those in the description. And with that being said, we're closing this episode of Creative Convos. Episodes are available on all major podcasting platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, videos on YouTube and FreeSpeak, and we will see you in the next one. Thanks, guys.